You can go ahead and open your Bible to 2 Samuel chapter 21, where we continue the story of all the bad things happening in David's life in the years that followed his sin with Bathsheba. We had his eldest son rape his half-sister. David didn't do anything about it, so David's next son murders the first son and then plots a coup against David, which eventually fails, even though David has to flee the city of Jerusalem. When David has his men go out to try to stop the Absalom coup, he tells them, capture my son, don't kill him. Joab makes sure that Absalom is killed. And David, I think, really hated Joab even more after that incident and made sure that he was not in command of the military forces anymore. So David is being brought back to the throne at Jerusalem. As he's crossing the Jordan, a fight, an argument breaks out between the tribe of Judah and the associated tribe of Simeon with the other tribes, the northern tribes, about which ones had the most investment in King David. And the bickering gets so bad that a new civil war breaks out. Sheba becomes a rebel, and this has to be resolved in quick order. And unfortunately, in the midst of all of it, Joab murders the new commander of the military forces and takes over again as commander of the United Forces of Israel. And David apparently can't do anything about it. He feels weak. He feels that he can't stand up against these folks that had been part of a rebellion against him not too long ago. It's a bad situation, but we should understand it's all fallout from the Bathsheba incident. This is all because of that. Now, there's one more thing that happens right around this time, and it's not surprising to me a bit. When a king who rules by strength looks weak, some of the people get it in their heads, I think this would be a good time for us to assert our independence. And so in 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 15, it says, "There was war again between the Philistines and Israel." So David had subdued the Philistine territory down on the Mediterranean coast not too long after he became king of United Israel at Jerusalem. The Philistines became subject to him. They paid taxes to him. Many of them seem to have converted to the Jewish faith and willingly joined in to the Israeli kingdom. You remember that we have an entire Gath brigade that is supporting David. They went with him across the Jordan when he went into exile during the Absalom coup. But apparently, after the Sheba rebellion followed the Absalom coup, the Philistines, at least some of them, felt this was the time to throw off the Israeli shackles of David. And so David has to bring them to heel. He has to bring them back under his control. They live inside the Promised Land, and so David feels that they have to be part of his kingdom. So there was war again between the Philistines and Israel, and David went down together with his servants, and they fought against the Philistines. David is probably right around 66 years of age, 66 or 67, and he's losing steps. He is actually going to rapidly deteriorate in his physical capabilities here. And this is the first big indicator of that. David grew weary. Now, that by itself doesn't give you the impression that he's, you know, physically debilitated. It just sounds like he's tired. But the idea is he cannot hold his own in battle anymore. We are told in verse 16, Ishbi-benob, one of the descendants of the giants. So he is one of the Rephaim remnants that took up residence amongst the Philistines way back at the beginning of Israel's time in the land when they were run out of the Hebron territory. So he's probably a relative of some sort of Goliath, whose spear weighed 300 shekels, so several pounds. About half the weight of Goliath's spear, by the way, who was armed with a new sword thought to kill David. So this guy has a brand new sword that I'm going to suggest to you he may have had forged specifically to kill David when David responded to their revolution against the Israelis. And so he and David are fighting, and David is losing. Now, this guy is a giant, remember. Verse 17, but Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and attacked the Philistine and killed him. So David is not able to hold himself against this giant. He's about to be killed. Abishai jumps in and kills the guy. And then this is what happens next. David's men swore to him, you shall no longer go out with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel. Now they had said something similar to that when David wanted to fight in the battles against Absalom's forces. But on that occasion, they told him, if he kills you, the battle is lost because you're the reason he's fighting this battle. Here, his men say, if you are killed, it is going to extinguish the light of Israel itself. The dynasty is probably going to end if you get killed. So after this little incident, there was war again with the Philistines at Gob. And this is one of those places where there's a variation between the Samuel passage and 1 Chronicles chapter 20, which is where you'll find the parallel. It's actually Gath that we're talking about here. Then Sibbecai the Hushathite struck down Saph, who was one of the descendants of the giants. So again, the Philistines, who are actually, they've got Greek blood. They migrated from the Greek islands and the Greek territories many centuries earlier. But they have developed a symbiotic relationship with the remnant of the Rephaim, the giants, the hybrids that apparently were part of another fallen angel project to try to cause trouble for humanity, particularly for the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So we got another battle that goes on at Gath, and another giant that gets himself killed by one of David's men. Well, the Philistine rebellion's still not over. Verse 19, there was again war with the Philistines at Gob, or Gath, and Elhanan, the son of Jaaret Gorim, I butchered that, sorry, Jaaret Oregim, the Bethlehemite, struck down, it's the brother of Goliath the Gittite. We know that from the parallel over in 1 Chronicles chapter 20. There his name is Lameh. The shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. That's exactly how Goliath's spear was described. And so another giant killed. Verse 20, and there was again war at Gath, and where there was a man of great stature, so he's a giant, who had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot, 24 in number. He also was descended from the giants, the Rephaim. And so we've got a little strange physiological anomaly here, which, interestingly enough, shows up in non-biblical stories about giants, stories here in North America. From the natives, pre-Columbian, pre-conquistador, that some of these giants had an extra digit on each of their extremities. And so here's an example of that from the Bible. And so this guy gets killed as well. Verse 21, when he taunted Israel, Jonathan the son of Shimei, David's brother, struck him down. So one of David's nephews kills this giant. These four were descended from the giants in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. So in all, during David's reign, we have five giants, most of them at Gath, that are killed because they are causing trouble for Israel. And so this seems to put down the Philistine uprising. And so Philistia comes back under the control of King David. At this point, I want you to jump ahead to 2 Samuel chapter 24. The parallel is in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Which will be very important to us. I believe that this happens in the spring or the summer of 982 BC, immediately after the collapse of the Absalom coup, the put down of the Sheba rebellion, and the put down of the Philistine uprising. So it's all been bad stuff going on for David for many months. And in the midst of it, he has also come to the realization he can't fight anymore. He is not physically capable of defending himself on the battlefield, and his men won't let him do it. He also knows that he doesn't have the full hearts of the people of Israel in support of his kingdom. And so all of this, I think, feeds into more of that depression of David as a king. And when you're in a depression, you make bad choices. 2 Samuel chapter 24, first, verse 1. Again, the anger of he who is was kindled against Israel. So the prophet writers of this section of Samuel say, here's another story to let you see how Israel got themselves in trouble with God again. Now, the next words in 2 Samuel is, "And he incited David against them, saying, 'Go number Israel and Judah.'" Now, that reading in 2 Samuel appears to say that God is the one that incited David to do this illicit census of Israel, which God then punishes. Now, that should automatically prompt you to go, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would God make David do something or prompt David to do something, which he then turns around and punishes him for? I think the answer is that there is a line missing in the text of 2 Samuel. We can recover that line in 1 Chronicles 21. Let's go over there. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1. "Then Satan stood up against Israel and incited David to number Israel." Now that makes more sense, doesn't it? That Satan, who's always looking to stir up trouble, to drive wedges between God, his people, and God's people with one another. Satan, looking at the turmoil going on in Israel at this time, looking at David's depression over all of this stuff, suggests to David in some form or fashion, you know, because he can use his people, because he's got people that work for him, to suggest to David, this is the way to come out of your deep blue funk. Number your people. Find out just how powerful you are. So let me read to you what I think the actual introduction to this story should read like in 2 Samuel chapter 24, if we restore what I believe is the missing line. 2 Samuel 24, 1. "Again, the anger of he who is was kindled against Israel when Satan stood up against Israel and incited David to number Israel, saying, 'Go number Israel and Judah.'" That's how I think pretty much it should read. And so David comes up with this idea from the temptation of Satan to find out just how powerful he is militarily. And this makes sense. One of the warnings that God gave through Moses to future kings of Israel was, do not multiply to yourself wives, horses, or chariots, and do not put your trust in a standing military. Because all of these things take away from the king's trust in God. So this is another one of those low points in David's administration, in his life. And honestly, folks, I believe this is still fallout from the Bathsheba incident. 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 2. "So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army who was with him." Remember, Joab is back in this role because he murdered the last guy that was in the role to seize control back. And David apparently does not feel strong enough to do anything against him yet. So he said, "Go through all the tribes of Israel from Dan," that's up in the north, "to Beersheba," that's in the south, "and number the people that I may know the number of the people." Now, this is not a full census of the population. That needs to be clearly understood. The reason Joab is doing this is to find out how many fighting men David can muster. David wants to know, what's my army size? Verse 3, Joab said to the king, may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times as many as they are, while the eyes of my lord the king still see it. But why does my lord the king delight in this thing? Now, this is fascinating to me. I have critiqued Joab repeatedly as a bad guy. He is a man that is murdered others in order to retake his own power. He is ruthless. He is not someone that fears the Lord in the sense that we would think. But when David tells him to go and number all of those who can be part of the military, he feels like this is a bad idea. And it is. He's right. Verse number 4. But the king's word prevailed against Joab and the commanders of the army. So it wasn't just Joab, it was the commanders of the army going, no, this is a bad idea. We should not be out there numbering the size of the militia just to make you feel better about yourself. That's not a good idea. But he won't listen to them. So what did they do? Verse 5. They crossed the Jordan, and they began from Aroer. Now, he starts in Transjordan. He starts in the annexed territories, the tribe of Reuben, the tribe of Gad, the tribe of the half-tribe of Manasseh up in the north, all that stuff on the east side of the Jordan. That's where they start counting first. From the city that's in the middle of the valley toward Gad and then on to Jazer. Then they came to Gilead, to Kadesh in the land of the Hittites. So basically they start down in the south where Reuben is at, and then they go north until they're up in the Golan, as we call it today, up in the foothills of Mount Hermon. Once they finish there, they go to Dan. From Dan, they went around to Sidon. So Dan is, like I said, at the foot of Mount Hermon, and it's counted as the northernmost large city of United Israel. If you go directly west from there, you come to the coast where Sidon is at. And so that's all under Israeli territory. It's all part of the Promised Land. And so they're counting. They came to the fortress of Tyre, and then all the cities of the Hivites and the Canaanites. That's all up in the north. And then they went out to the Negev of Judah at Beersheba. So then they go southward through the Promised Land proper until they get all the way down to the largest big city in the south. That's Beersheba. And they've done a lot of counting then. Verse number, let's see, 8. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. And Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to the king in Israel. There were 800,000 valiant men who drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000. Now, the numbers are slightly different over in the Chronicles, and as I've warned you before, we've got transmission difficulties when we hand copy over and over and over again. Two of the hardest things to hand copy accurately are proper names and numbers. And so it's easy to get little variations here and there. So over in 1 Chronicles chapter 21, starting at verse 4, it says, "But the king's word prevailed against Joab. So Joab departed. He went throughout all of Israel and came back to Jerusalem. Joab gave the sum of the numbering of the people to David. In all Israel, there were 1,100,000 men who drew the sword. And in Judah, 470,000 who drew the sword." So 470,000 in Judah, that's probably that's probably rounded up to 500,000 over in the Samuel passage. The 800,000 is probably a representation of the non-Judean tribes. And so you throw it all together and you get up well over a million. So we got 1.1 million over in the Chronicles passage. Verse 6, "But Joab did not include Levi and Benjamin in numbering, for the king's command was abhorrent to Joab." So Joab didn't even bother numbering the entire tribe of Benjamin. He definitely didn't number the tribe of Levi because he was not a happy camper about this. He felt that this would get them in trouble with God. And guess what? It did. Because God was displeased with this thing. And we will end up with a plague coming from God against Israel as punishment for being participants in this enumeration of the fighting forces. And honestly, I think the plague will also take out a lot of people that were involved in the different coups of Absalom and Sheba and the Philistine uprisings.